Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron, the amazing fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service that I've been using for a while now. And the other night, I was sitting around the kitchen table with my wife and my mom, and our fridge has gotten a little bit on the cluttered side recently. So we were sitting there talking about whether to order another Blue Apron box for that week or hold off until we emptied the fridge out a little bit. And the two of them started talking about why they like doing the Blue Apron recipes. So like a sleuth for this ad, I started recording with my iPhone. And FYI, they had no idea I was rolling.
Because it is so
communal.
Mm-hmm. And organized and step by step. And I just feel like it appeals to...
I think whoever does it is so smart. And Maria actually does it with Fiona.
Mm-hmm.
And she enjoys it. And she...
That was my mom talking at the end there, and she was talking about my sister Maria and her four-year-old daughter Fiona. They have caught on to the whole Blue Apron thing. They do the recipes together as a little mother-daughter project. So obviously, the entire Ponce family, we are big fans. We've all learned a ton about the culinary arts through Blue Apron. And you, as a Backseat Rider listener, can get your first three meals for free with free shipping by visiting BlueApron.com/backseat. Trust me, try it. You will thank me. Cheaper than takeout, and you will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Again, that is BlueApron.com/backseat. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
Hello, everybody. I hope you had a great week. Welcome to another episode of Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive Lyft and whoever ends up in the backseat of my car becomes the cast of the show. And this week's conversation starter, which I hope you will think about as you are listening today, is the following. What in your life do you need to let go of?
The need to always be in control.
Putting less, maybe, predetermined structure around how I handle things.
Marijuana, nothing else.
All right, to kick things off, real quick, I got a note on Facebook the other day from a woman named Francisca. And she posted on my wall that one of the reasons that she checks out the podcast is, and I'm quoting her here, she wrote, "Way too often, especially nowadays, judgment comes in a nanosecond without knowing people's story. So I feel this helps to give us all perspectives and pause, suspend, or remove judgment." That's what she wrote. And I really appreciated hearing that because it kind of sums up the whole point of what I'm trying to do with this podcast. And I found that if you understand more about where people are coming from with their point of view, which off the bat may offend or infuriate you, when you learn their backstory, you can at least understand better, not necessarily agree with them, but just understand where they're coming from better. And that kind of understanding, that is always the best jumping off point for actually having a meaningful dialogue. All right, so with that in mind, I want you to listen in on the conversation that I shared with a rider on the north side of Chicago the other day. Pretty short ride. It's from Ravenswood to Rogers Park. And for context, she's 37 years old and works as a freelance makeup artist.
What do you need to let go of?
Ooh.
It's you can answer it any way you want.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, that's a tough one, because actually that's been coming up a lot lately for me personally. I don't know if I have one specific thing that I need to let go of.
Why has it been coming up a lot recently for you?
I've just been having some tough discussions with people lately, based on just social and political things that are happening right now. And there just seems to be this air of aggression on both sides when those discussions arise, which is completely understandable. So I'm struggling right now with this thought of, like, listening more, I think, instead of always feeling like my side of the story needs to be heard, too. So that's been a challenge.
So maybe letting go of the need to, or letting go of the tendency to want to talk, and not, like, step back and
listen. Right. Which is interesting for me to think about because I wouldn't consider myself a talkative person necessarily. But I think it's more this feeling of, I think I have a voice in things too, and maybe my voice isn't always necessary, I've been told, in certain situations.
That sounds kind of...
It sounds controversial. It's hard to, like...
That wouldn't sit well with me if someone says my voice doesn't need to be heard.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I got told recently in a pretty heated argument.
Do you mind taking me through that discussion? Whatever you're comfortable disclosing.
Yeah. It was a friend of mine posted something about how she's Black and she was upset that there was, like, a rally or a meeting in D.C. about all the Black girls that have been missing lately. And her post was specifically about how upset she was that no white women were showing up for things like that.
And for anyone who is unfamiliar with the story that she's referring to here, there's an uproar right now about the fact that hundreds of girls have been reported missing this past year from Washington, D.C., and overwhelmingly minority, overwhelmingly African American. Now, the D.C. Police Department says there hasn't necessarily been a spike in cases, but they're now using social media to bring more awareness of the problem, which led to the hashtag Missing DC Girls exploding on Twitter.
I kind of stepped in and I was like, you know, I understand that you feel like that, but, you know, just so you know, I'm aware of what's going on. I've been talking about it. I have other friends that are white that have been talking about it and paying attention. You know, we're here. And then immediately I got thrown back with, well, we don't want you here.
By her.
By her.
So she wants more white representation at the rallies, but as soon as you step in with a message of support,
it's like, you are all fakes and phonies anyway, and we don't need your help. So it's a complete contradiction, of course, and just got me very confused. And that's when I told that my voice wasn't always necessary, even though she was asking for a voice. I don't know.
So that's been on your mind a lot then?
Yeah. And I can kind of, like, I understand where she's coming from too, in that, you know, it's just, you know, she's frustrated. I think maybe she doesn't really know that her aggression is being, like, put on the wrong people, you know? So I'm just trying to, like, take a step back and, like, listen a little bit more. Like, maybe not always have to, like, interject, but really take in what's being said and, like, trying to understand, like, where other people are coming from. And then use my voice when I feel like things have calmed down a little bit.
It's a really interesting time. I think a lot of people, like you said, you're not always the most talkative person. When it comes to politics, neither am I. But I find that in this climate, a lot of people like us are kind of starting to come off the sidelines a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's so divisive and it's so emotional right
Exactly.
now.
Yeah, I think the emotion takes over pretty quickly. I think that's part of my, like, stepping back and, like, listening more, is that I'm trying to kind of curb that emotional reaction and actually have, like, you know, more productive discussions instead of going right for the I'm offended and, you know, what you're saying's not right. And, yeah, maybe just being a little more careful with my tone and my words.
Makes sense. Now, was this back and forth with this one woman Was it all over Facebook, or was there any person-to-person interaction?
Unfortunately, it was on Facebook, and that's where I should not have engaged as long as I did, because then there were other people that I don't even know that are her friends that started jumping in on it.
Oh.
And then,
did they start hanging up on you?
Yeah. Which then, I'm just to them, a little profile picture and a name on Facebook. They don't have any association with who I am as a person or what I really, feel or what I do in my life to support these causes I believe in. So that I understand too, that it's very easy to come at me because I'm the voice of dissent among all these people that feel one certain way, and I'm not a real person in that moment.
Yeah.
It
might have been a completely different discussion if you were all sitting around the
absolutely.
Table.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I'm currently on a Facebook hiatus. I have disconnected for at least 2 weeks, possibly longer. I'm going to give it some time.
It's been 2 weeks since that happened?
No, it's only been... That happened on, Friday
night. Yeah, because that story just gained steam this past week. Yeah.
So, I'm giving myself a 2-week time frame to be off Facebook at minimum.
That's wise.
Yeah.
And how's it going for you so far?
So far, so good. Yeah. I'm still keeping informed. I'm still reading the news. I don't want to engage in any conversations right now that can go that wrong, as it felt like that particular one did, because it's not productive and it's not contributing anything to making things better.
You're right, because this is a black and white discussion,
right?
No pun intended. When there's shades of gray and there's nuance and there's tone and there's intention that gets lost.
Yep.
So how long did this interaction put you in a funk for? Because when something like that happens with me online at 10, I tend to stew about it.
Mm-hmm.
How was it for you this time?
I mean, I was in a funk all weekend. I mean, it lasted the entire weekend. I started, asking questions of other friends of mine, to kind of get some more perspective. Not that I felt like I needed to be validated in what I did, but just to make sure that I wasn't completely overstepping the way that I was told I was. And I got initially really, really disheartened. I was like, I feel like I just don't even want to try anymore. Why am I even trying to be, aware of what's going on, and why am I trying to educate myself if there's still all this divisiveness?
Yeah.
And that even when we have these causes that we both believe in, there's still divisions that can be pointed out.
When she got out, I thought to myself, what a waste that a Facebook comment basically wound up ruining an entire weekend of this woman's life. Now, I realize we can't all read the exact text of her comment about the so-called white support of this issue. Perhaps it was poorly worded. Perhaps it came off argumentative when the intention behind the comment was one of support. It's kind of hard to say without reading it. But I did pick up on a certain degree of guilt and regret in her retelling of the story, as I'm sure you did as well. But I also believe that based on what she said, that an all-out argument and all these hurt feelings probably wouldn't have happened if she and her friend were sitting face-to-face. So back to the letting go question. She's letting go of Facebook, at least temporarily, to kind of regroup, and also trying to let go of this impulse to chime in on these hot-button topics, at least in a forum like that. I picked up a woman in the South Loop. It was a really rainy day, and she needed a ride to a place that I spent countless hours when I was a reporter here in Chicago, and that is the Cook County Criminal Courthouse, which is better known in Chicago. Most people call it 26th and Cal because it's at the corner of 26th and California. And this is where most of the local newsworthy cases get tried. The murders, fatal DUIs, sex assaults, all that stuff. And the Cook County Jail is also on the same complex. It's this major facility. And again, it was raining out. And the woman I picked up, she was a defense attorney, 28 years old, and has been in that role for 3 years.
What in your life do you need to let go of?
Stress.
Stress. Something that 99% of us could probably answer that question with. But unlike many of us, because of the nature of her job, defending people who are oftentimes sitting in jail, she says she winds up taking on a good deal of her clients' stress because in many ways their livelihood is in her hands.
I mean, if you've been arrested, it's a big deal in your life. It's probably, you know, one of the most stressful. I mean, I'm talking about my stress, but my client's stress is through the roof. I mean, I don't think it's comparable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're looking at, you know, not just necessarily jail time, but losing your job, losing your house. You know, there's maybe a breakdown of family relationships or friend relationships or, you know, the consequences can be really devastating. So, you know, every client wants to make sure that, you know, that you're doing the best you can for them, and they should. I mean, if I was in my client's situation, I'd feel the same way.
In fact, she was on her way into the jail to visit a client that day that I drove her, although she wouldn't discuss with me the circumstances of that case or any of her other cases, which is totally understandable. But what she did tell me, what she could tell me, is that she mostly defends people charged with domestic violence, criminal damage to property, and other misdemeanor charges.
What is that like? What's that experience like going into a jail and meeting with a client?
It's actually one of my favorite parts of the job, to be honest. Not the physical building or anything, but because it's an opportunity to really talk to my clients, get their side of the story, take the time to explain the legal process and really break everything down. A lot of times before and after court, it's kind of rushed. So that's the part of my job that I look forward to.
And before she got out, she clarified that although in an ideal world, she'd be able to let go of some of the stress that comes with her job, she'd never give up all of it.
I mean, I think it's important. I mean, that's why I went into the field I went into. Yeah, there's so much working against my clients, you know, socioeconomically, generally, if you just look at the statistics of who's charged with a crime. So I think it's kind of a calling.
So I let her out there and was just sitting in my car right outside the courthouse, pouring down rain. And I decided to just sit and wait there for a while after thinking to myself, all right, this is a building. You don't end up in this building unless you have some kind of backstory as to why you're here. Some kind of compelling backstory normally. And that turned out to be right.
Like I'm on house arrest, and my thing is I have to go to drug treatment.
And we will hear the rest of what turned out to be a pretty enlightening car ride in just a minute. But first, got some sponsors to talk about that make Backseat Rider free for you to listen to each week. And one of them, this is an app that I love and I use it almost every week. And that is Audible, which is the app that gives you access to tens of thousands of audiobooks. And if you like podcasts, I'm guessing you like audiobooks as well. So pay attention because I'm about to give you one for free. Rewinding for a second back to my 14th episode of this podcast. This is one of my most popular episodes that I did. And in that episode, I asked everybody what book had the biggest impact on you. And if you listen to that episode, you'll recall my answer to that question was a book called Daring Greatly by a woman named Brené Brown. And there's a ton in there, but the essence of it was embracing the emotion of vulnerability, embracing the feeling of vulnerability, not running away from it. And also how when you present your authentic self to the world, that good things come out of it. And so, yes, this book played a major role in my decision to pursue podcasting in the first place and this whole venture. And yes, many good things have happened to me as a result. So I cannot recommend this book highly enough. It's called Daring Greatly. Again, it's one of the biggest reasons I launched this podcast. And as a Backseat Rider listener, you can download it for free or get any of the other 180,000 titles for free just by going to audibletrial.com/rider. And it's a nice little opportunity, everybody. That book changed my life. Perhaps you'll find one that changes your life as well. You can download it for free, again, by going to audibletrial.com/rider. Again, that is audibletrial.com/rider for your free audiobook.
I'm John Horn. I'm the host of Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. I'm here with our very first guest, Rainn Wilson.
Hi, John. It looks like I'm the first guest on the Geffen Unclothed. Unscripted. Unscripted. Yeah, let's go with that.
A marriage made in heaven, I guess.
Or Westwood.
Tune in for some of our exciting upcoming guests, David Copperfield, Neil LaBute, Neil Patrick Harris, Josh Gad, Rita Wilson, and many more. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app and on iTunes. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.
And I'm Rainn Wilson, the first guest.
You are first guest.
This was a huge mistake.
Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Huge mistake.
Another sponsor who makes Backseat Rider free for you each week is TrueCar, which I would highly recommend if you're in the market right now for a new or used car. And I speak from experience on this one as well. When my wife and I bought our last car, we used TrueCar because it lets you see what other people paid for the same car that you are looking for. So that way, you go into the dealership, you're confident, you're not worried that you're going to get taken advantage of by some salesman. And the other thing is, once you register with TrueCar and configure the exact vehicle that you're looking for, you will get actual pricing on an existing vehicle. Now, that may sound kind of obvious, but a lot of times people configure cars online, do all that upfront legwork, only to later find out that that car doesn't actually exist at any of the dealerships close to them. So TrueCar totally solves that. And again, you will see what other people wound up paying for that vehicle. So you have all the information you need. Plus, get this, TrueCar users wind up saving, on average, $3,000 off MSRP. So, when you're ready to buy, do what I did, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, so picking up right where we left off, I'm sitting at 26th and Cal, right outside the courthouse, still pouring down rain, and I get a ride request from a woman. I'm going to call her Tanya, and it was raining hard enough that she called me right away. You can do that via the Lyft app, and she was like, I'm wearing gray sweatpants. I got a gray hoodie, so find me. So I pull up. I see someone matching that description. She jumps in the car with a guy who looks about her age, and I didn't ask her directly right off the bat what they were doing at court that day, but that soon became obvious when I asked her what she needed to let go of.
Marijuana.
Oh man.
Yeah, a lot of people in Chicago smoke, so it's like, to us, it's a natural thing.
Now Tanya, who just turned 27 by the way, she doesn't think that smoking pot is a bad thing. The only reason that she wants to give it up and let it go is because she kind of has to.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm on house arrest, and my thing is I have to go to drug treatment, and I've called drug places, but drug places say marijuana is a mental addiction, not a physical addiction. So they would not like to help me because they rather help the people who are on heroin or crack cocaine or stuff like that. So it's like, well, I'm on house arrest, so I kind of do need the help because I want to go out.
So what does being on house arrest mean? Do you have a thing around your ankle?
Yeah.
Okay, and what happens if you leave the house? What happens with the ankle thing?
Well, I ask for movement because I get movement because of me working, and I have probation officers to see. So I call, and I have to let them know where I'm going, what's the address, the phone number, the person's name, and everything like that. And then they approve it or not.
How did you get put on house arrest?
Because I dropped dirty for marijuana.
Because you did what?
Drop dirty for marijuana.
What's drop dirty mean?
Like, if... you ain't from Chicago, are you?
I smoked. They drug tested her.
I'm on probation for a DUI, and they drug tested me, and I dropped dirty.
Oh, okay. So that means you failed the drug test.
Yes, I failed.
Even though it was only marijuana.
Yes, even though it was only marijuana. They don't care. It's still a drug to them. It's not legal yet.
Right.
But two blocks away from my house, I have a marijuana dispensary.
Yeah. I do too. It's like five blocks away from
mine. Yeah, mine is like two blocks. Like, are you kidding me?
Now, it's not legal, but marijuana, it's becoming less and less of a big deal around Chicago. And here in Cook County, instead of an automatic misdemeanor or a more severe charge, officers do have the option of just giving you a ticket if you're caught with under a certain amount. And so that winds up keeping all the low-level offenders out of the criminal justice system, which, as you know, costs taxpayers a lot of money. But you heard Tanya say there, the reason that she was put on house arrest for it was because she failed that drug test in the wake of a more serious charge, a DUI, which happened when she was driving alone one night.
Okay. It was my rods were rusted and my rods had cracked when I hit a bump and my tire flew off and I had smacked the parked car.
Oh, okay.
And just because I had a couple of drinks, I got a DUI.
How far over the limit were you?
I was 1 point over the limit. So I was a 0.09.
She blew a 0.09, and the limit in Illinois, 0.08. Fortunately, it was only a parked car that she hit, so no one was hurt. For Tanya, though, it meant initiation into the Cook County criminal justice system.
So what brought you to 26 and Cal today?
I had to go see my probation officer.
Okay.
I'll do a follow-up with her.
Okay. And how'd it go?
Good. She loves me.
How long are you going to be on house arrest?
Well, for this case should be over May 5th.
Okay. And what's the charge? Just
a DUI.
Oh, it's on the DUI card.
And then the other one was having a substance abuse or something like that. Having prescription drugs without having a prescription.
Okay. What was it?
Xanax.
Oh, okay.
It's for anxiety.
Right.
And now they're telling me that I gotta go get prescribed for it because my anxiety is overwhelming. And I said, but that's what's I got locked up for it and I'm going to court for it, but y'all want to shove it down my throat?
Just to hammer that point home, if Tanya's being accurate, that means she is being criminally charged for having the exact same drug that her doctor is trying to prescribe her right now. So think about that. So Tanya wishes that she could just keep smoking pot for the anxiety, which she says that she deals with on a day-to-day or night-to-night basis because of her work. She works at a 24-hour diner as a server.
Have you been able to, because after the failed drug test, have you been able to not do it?
Well, I smoke here and there, mm-hmm. but I'm not trying to be as dirty as I was. Mm-hmm. Because then there's sometimes when, you know, coming home from work at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's just aggravating. After 8 hours of running back and forth and you couldn't sit down and eat once or even go to the bathroom. So all I want to do is, you know, calm myself down, smoke a blunt, and go to sleep. And then I have to be back up to go back straight to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what would you say to the people who are still anti-marijuana?
They just haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. They haven't tried it yet. Because everybody I know, every friend, every family member, they smoke. So it's in my family, like it's around me. It's not like something like I can't really get away from because everybody I know does it. I don't do harder drugs. I just like smoking marijuana. Mm-hmm.
What can you or what have you learned from it?
I've learned a lot from it, like because I used to go out a lot and party and whatever, and then after these cases, I don't. Like, I try to stay away from the people that, you know, make me want to smoke and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I like to smoke. I feel chill when I smoke. Like, mm-hmm. I feel relaxed.
All right, before we go on, real quick, I've got this really good family friend who's a therapist, really smart guy. And he told me one time something that totally stuck with me, and that is that when we meet new people, we're actually subconsciously evaluating these new people on dozens and dozens of levels that we're not aware of consciously, but it's all happening. Things like, you know, how they're dressed, how they walk, their facial expressions, who they're with, all those things. Those are just the obvious ones, but we're really sizing people up in countless ways. And I think that's fascinating. Even before we even talk to these people, we form an opinion. And when this next passenger got in the car, I think I'd already made up my mind that she was this high performer. She just had that aura of success and having her life together. And I picked her up in a Chicago suburb, and she needed a ride to a business meeting in another nearby suburb when she agreed to let me record.
This week, one of the questions I'm asking folks is, what in your life do you need to let go of? And you can answer it however you want. Letting go is the theme.
Interesting. I guess the need to always be in control. And that's something that I, just by nature of what I do, there's lots of situations that I can't be totally in control of, and it causes me a lot of anxiety. And so I think, and also I'm a working mom with two kids, so there's not
a lot of variables.
Not a lot of control there either.
How old are your kids?
One of her kids is 9, the other is 5.
It gets worse when they get older. It's scarier when they're little because it's a new feeling, I think. But it actually, as they get older, the things that they're bigger problems or bigger issues, and you realize how much more helpless you are the older they get.
Really?
Yeah, and not to scare you.
No, can you give me an example of that? Like a situation where it's like just experience that feeling of you're helpless in a given situation.
So, like, my younger son is struggling a little bit with, like, anger, and how does he express, what are appropriate ways to express anger? Mm-hmm. And sometimes when he gets really upset, he might lash out physically. And you want to be there to help him manage his emotions, but then he's going to kindergarten next year, and when you look at it, and I just start thinking about all the situations that he's going to be in, and the situations where he could get angry, and I'm not going to be able to be there to help manage every little situation, nor is it, maybe a teacher that knows him really well, like his teachers at daycare know and love him and can help him through these situations. And so it's just sometimes it can make you feel very powerless, but also scared for them. So, I don't know, it's things like that.
Scared for your son, or scared for the other kids, or scared for the teacher?
Scared for my son, because he's not hurting anybody. It's more just that he's going to get disciplined for what he's doing, because it's not an appropriate, it's an overreaction, and he gets this really overriding feeling of shame when he reacts like that, and which then like makes the whole cycle even worse.
Oh, it's like a vicious cycle.
It is. It really is. He gets upset about getting in trouble, and it makes his reactions even worse, and that's the stuff I worry about.
So, all right, back to the control thing then. Is this something that you have acknowledged in the past, or is it something kind of more recent where you're like, all right, I have to like accept the fact that I can't control, like not everything is within my power to, play a role in?
I think that it's an ongoing struggle, and that there are things that happen that bring it into sharper relief from time to time. I'm working on a difficult issue at work right now, and it's very intense. And I'm a lawyer, so I can't really give any details about it. And it's something that I can't really control. And so for me, it sort of is highlighting that issue once again. So I think it's a cyclical, for me, thing.
Right.
And real quick, when I was logging this interview, which basically means listening to it really carefully and transcribing all the good parts and marking where they are, I noticed that the microphone picked up something that I didn't in the car when I first asked my initial question, what do you need to let go of? And I'm going to play it again, and I'm going to boost the audio so you can hear it now. And pay really close attention after she says the word interesting. Here you go.
Letting go is the theme.
There it was right there, right under her breath. She asked herself, what did he say? as if she'd recently explored this same question with another person. Either that or she whispered to herself, what do we say? As if she was making this like mental pit stop to make sure that she didn't say anything she didn't want to on tape. Either way, I just thought that was kind of a uncontrolled moment for someone who self-describes as the exact opposite.
What would it take for you to get there, do you think?
I don't know.
Or like, how do you manage the anxiety that's a result of feeling this need to let go of control and sometimes not being able to?
Yeah. I have wine in the evening.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's why I say it's something that I think I've been a perfectionist since I was a kid. And this is just to me, like another side, another manifestation of that. And, you know, I just try to deal with it as best I can.
All right. The last passenger I want to introduce you to this week is one of the youngest people I've ever driven.
Yeah, I'm in school and I play football.
He's a junior at a suburban high school. He plays running back. And he was headed to a friend's house in the middle of the day. And when I asked him what he needs to let go of, he responded by saying negative people who are in his life.
Just like people who aren't trying to like help you better yourself or like offering the same thing that you're trying to offer.
And is there someone in your life right now that's an example of a negative person? That's not really offering you, like you said, what you're trying to offer them back?
Yeah, my dad.
What's an example of something your dad does or says that is negative for you?
Like, he just doesn't bring me up. Like, he doesn't support me for my things. Like, it's always a negative comment, or it's like I'm always trying to play victim to a situation. Like, it's just like he's just negative all the time. Like, it's always a negative vibe with him. It's never a good vibe. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. How long has it been like that with your dad?
For about like 3 years now.
3 years now. And in those 3 years, he has accomplished some major things on the football field.
My freshman year coming in, I had 13 touchdowns. My sophomore year, I had 12 touchdowns. I had missed two games because I got suspended for two games. And then my junior year, I had 8 touchdowns because I had to share with because he was the star running back and he was the senior. So I was behind him, but learning from it as well.
So how is it looking for your senior year? Are you going to be starting or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm going to be starting. I'm a captain right now.
That's awesome, man. You're captain of your high school varsity football team?
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So, has your dad ever seen you play?
Yeah, he's seen me play. He's the reason why I like started to like love football. Because he played football. And he was good, so I started to play football, and I was good.
And when's the last time he's seen you play?
I'm going to say my sophomore year.
And what year are you now?
I'm a junior.
Okay. So
he only came to like one game. You feel me? So it was like,
man. And when he didn't show up to, did you want him to show up to more games?
Yeah.
Why do you think he didn't?
I don't know. He never answered the phone, so I could never get an answer. But you feel me? I couldn't really focus on that much.
Right, because you got to focus on the game.
Right.
And did he ever work with you on football when you were growing up?
Yeah.
What kinds of stuff?
At first, I started off as a quarterback. He used to help me with throwing because he was a quarterback. And then he had just, like, had me condition, like, teach me stuff, footwork, try to teach me the game.
And so, was he living with you at that point?
Somewhat.
Somewhat? Just off and on?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's been off for 3 years.
Nah, that was back when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Like, we've been separated for a while, but we still kind of had a relationship. And then, these last 3 years, the relationship just been, like, over. man.
Do you have any idea what led to it?
Not at all.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, I'm good, because I'm good.
Now, the time spent with his father happened in a completely different world than the suburb that he lives in today.
I'm not from Evanston. I'm originally from Cabrini Green, if you know where that is.
Yeah.
Cabrini Green, infamous housing project on the near northwest side of Chicago. Now, almost all of it is gone today, but in its heyday, if you want to call it that, it was, you know, known for crime, violence, very, very tough place. And it used to be high rises and row homes. Some of the Cabrini row homes are still there, but the neighborhood at this point, it's largely gentrified. And the last Cabrini high rise was torn down back in 2011.
That's where I grew up.
So you grew up in the projects?
Yeah.
Till how old?
Until I was like, maybe like 12. And then I moved into another area, in the area of the project. And then I moved out here when I was like maybe 13.
So you're kind of, you have a different background than a lot of your teammates.
Yeah, definitely.
And they elected you to be their leader, right?
Yeah.
Or the coaches, did your teammates elect you?
Teammates.
But what do you think it is about you that made your teammates want to turn to you for leadership on the team?
Because I accept people for who they are, you know, and I rather lead than try to bring people down, because that's not going to help nobody. Like, even if it's a person that, like, don't even really play that much, you feel me? I'm still going to bring them up, make them feel good about themselves, and, you know, like, I'm just a good team leader, like, get everybody going, like, make sure things is, you know, going to get straight, and, like, you feel me? I stay on top of my stuff, so. I like what they can look up to me, like the younger players and underclassmen can look up to me.
So for younger players and underclassmen to look up to him, and for his teammates to have elected him captain, that is no small feat for someone who spent many of his formative years living in a place like Cabrini Green. And it's a shame his dad isn't there to see all this, especially because this coming fall, his senior year, he will be the starting running back on the varsity team. And his face lit up when I asked him to give me a little preview of the upcoming season.
And this season, what's it looking like?
This season, I don't know, just stay tuned. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, huge thanks to all my riders for sharing with me this week. I'm really hoping that they are each able to let go of whatever they need to let go. And as for me, what I'm trying to let go of, for me, I actually really connected to what the working mom said about control. I think I suffer from that exact same thing as well. And I think just being able to embrace a little bit of chaos, or at least accept that a certain amount of chaos is kind of inevitable, kind of a part of life, especially when you're a relatively new parent trying out something completely new for a career. Chaos is kind of inevitable. So letting go of the need to try to control everything would help me out a ton as well. Okay, before we go, a couple voicemails I want to play. And these are both in response to episode 24, which was titled First Kiss. I asked every passenger to tell me about their first kiss and the story behind their first kiss. So the reason I chose these two messages is they kind of demonstrate the extremes on each end of the spectrum when it comes to a first kiss story. And FYI, the second caller, not safe for work or for kids. So fair warning, if your kids are around, tell them to earmuff it or turn the volume down or put headphones on, whatever you need to do. First call comes from Suzette in Dallas, Texas.
I had my first kiss when I was 13 and the boy was 16 in the city that I grew up in, Michigan, in the back of my house in the snowy woods on the top of a hill against a tree in the snow. And 42 years later, high over Texas, one husband and two wives later, he and I are getting married and he's going to be my last kiss. And there's a whole lot more to the story, but you don't have room on your machine. See ya. Bye.
Hi, Anthony. I love your podcast. My name is Taylor, and I'm calling from Watertown. And my first kiss happened when I was 8. I'm going to call this guy Brandon for now. That's not his real name, obviously. But our parents, we were in, like, he was in my class too, I believe. And my mom was doing a parent-teacher conference, and his mom was working in the library also doing those conferences. So we ended up in the gym. We're playing around with these mats. I think it was we were watching basketball practice, and we played this game called Closer, and, like, it was a heck. I don't know how I really felt about it because it's been so long ago, but get this. I mean, this kid, even though he was a class clown, even then, he was a player, like such a player. So one summer when we were in middle school, we hooked up again and we're in his room and we're making out like preteen, innocently hot, passionate. And get this, he's 13 and I'm 14 at this point. And all of a sudden, he asks me at 13 years old to perform oral on him. And somehow I had the common sense to say no. I don't know where that has been. And since then, I've been scarred to perform oral because it just takes me back to when this kid was 13.
So there you go. One person whose first kiss wound up being a guy who traumatized her permanently, scarred her there. And the other whose first kiss, decades and decades later, turned out to be the love of her life. Congratulations to them. And I actually just heard both those messages because the hotline was down for a little bit there. But I might have to actually call that first woman back to hear how that love story wound up playing out. Sounds like they both had previous marriages before they rediscovered each other. So could be worth getting the full story there. I'll keep you posted. And if you would like to give the Backseat Rider Hotline a call with one of your stories, your thoughts on this or any other episode, give me a call. 312-709-4667. And I hope this episode got you thinking about something or multiple things in your life that you might need to let go of right now. And if you do have an answer to that question that you think other people might connect with or relate to, give me a call. I might play it on the podcast here. And kind of on a related note, I also think it'd be really cool to hear from people who have successfully and consciously let something go, where you say to yourself, I need to let this go, and then you let it go. And then you successfully remain without that thing, whatever it is. So I would love to hear some success stories of people who have successfully let negative things that are kind of bringing them down. If you have a success story, if you've successfully done that, I would love to hear from you. Again, the number is 312-709-4667, or you can always drop me a note on Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, right now, we are in the process of creating a Facebook group where listeners of this show, you all, would be able to kind of organically connect with one another, talk about what you're hearing on the show, bring up kind of whatever you want, really. And I'd love it if you checked in with me online. This is kind of an ongoing process. I'm still not sure whether that group will be up and running by the time this podcast posts, but I think it's going to be a really cool thing. And again, my whole mission with Backseat Rider is to get people connecting. And in an organic way, in kind of a deeper, non-superficial way. And in my limited experience in Facebook groups, especially when they're closed groups, there is a lot less BS. It's a really good use of Facebook. I know I've been ripping on social media and Facebook a lot in recent weeks, but when it comes to a moderated group, it can actually be really cool if it's moderated correctly and with tact, which we do plan on doing. So stay tuned for details about that. All right, that is it for this week. Only homework I have, if you do have an iPhone, please leave Backseat Rider a rating and a review. If you use the podcasts app, that would be so appreciated. It would help me out a good deal. And also get that free audiobook as a backseat rider listener, really hoping people check out that Brené Brown book. Again, it's called Daring Greatly, and it is at audibletrial.com/rider. Also, don't forget about my Lyft promo code. It's easy to remember, just the name of this podcast, Backseat Rider, all one word. That is good for up to $50 in free ride credit for any new users of the Lyft app. And all this information I've written and posted in the show notes for your convenience. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin and produced by me with the help of Louis Kazmarek. And also a big thanks to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. As always, look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and on iTunes. Backseat Rider.